Welcome to Transforming Growth, presented by STEG, a CEPR consortium initiative. My name is Tim Phillips, and in this series, I've been investigating some of the most important new research in economic development. Now, this week, I'm talking to Nicola Limodio of Bocconi University about what must be one of the largest injections of FDI ever, I would have thought, the investments of Chinese firms in developing economies. But first of all, I'm joined again by Doug Gollin from STEG. Doug, welcome back.
Hi, Tim. Good to be back. So we were really excited to choose Nicola's paper because, as you've pointed out already, Chinese investment in developing economies, the flow of FDI from China to the rest of the world, and particularly into sub-Saharan Africa in recent decades, has been a really massive phenomenon, and one that's not well understood, especially in terms of its impacts on the receiving countries and on firms within the receiving countries. And so having a paper that tries to use some really innovative approaches to get at the impacts seemed like a great thing.
How important is FDI in general for countries that want to go through a structural transformation?
Well, I think there's long been an assumption that FDI can play a really important and positive role for countries on the receiving end, in part because of the sheer flow of investment, and in part because FDI often embeds new technologies, understanding of opportunities in the international marketplace. And so there's a lot of interest in the ways in which receiving countries learn and benefit from FDI. Given the size and the scale of Chinese FDI into sub-Saharan Africa, it seems like a great opportunity to look and to try to understand what the impacts are. And one of the things that Nicola tries to do in this paper is to see both the impact on domestic Ethiopian firms from the flow of FDI from China into Ethiopia, and also to see what happens spatially, what happens across the landscape in Ethiopia as these investments take hold.
Well, these are fascinating questions. Let's try and find out some of the answers. You're listening to Transforming Growth. Nicola, welcome.
Hello, Tim.
Now, Nicola, how large has China's FDI in Africa been recently?
Well, it's large and growing. And, you know, in this new paper on Chinese FDI with Riccardo Crescenzi from the LSE, we go and try to be very specific about this topic. To give you a sense, Chinese FDI in 2003 amounted to $75 million. In 2019, that amounts to $2.7 billion. Mm. So you can see that it has shown a remarkable growth over time, exceeding FDI coming from other countries like the United States consistently since the mid-2010.
I see. And what have Chinese companies invested in Africa?
Well, let me break down a little bit that in two ways. First of all, in terms of geography, where have Chinese companies gone? Well, the top five recipients of Chinese FDI in Africa in 2019 were the Democratic Republic of Congo, Angola, Ethiopia, South Africa, and Mauritius. However, as highlighted in the data, and as you know, Margaret McMillan at Tufts University highlighted, over the past decade, the Chinese have been diversifying considerably their, you know, countries of investment. And so nowadays, more and more African countries are involved in Chinese FDI. The second point, when we think about, okay, where is this Chinese FDI going in Africa? Here I can tell a little bit about the composition of this investment. Mm. And that here I need to focus on Ethiopia because, you know, there is a huge diversity across countries. Mm. And I can tell you that Chinese investment in Ethiopia, in terms of size of amounts, are not dissimilar from non-Chinese FDI, but they are different. For instance, they are much more, quote-unquote, exclusive. Chinese projects in Ethiopia involve considerably less Ethiopian partners than non-Chinese FDI. Only 13% of Chinese FDI shows some degree of collaboration with local firms, while this is like a third for non-Chinese FDI. Also, in Ethiopia, Chinese FDI is overwhelmingly focused on manufacturing. More than 60% of Chinese investment is headed toward this sector, while that's less than 30% for non-Chinese FDI. This is just to say that, you know, the narrative of Chinese investment in Africa flowing exclusively toward natural resources is inadequate to some extent and, you know, factually incorrect.
We have also seen in Africa the politicization of the debate about Chinese FDI, haven't we, in several countries? And there have been political arguments about whether or not this FDI is good or bad for economic development. What are these arguments?
You are absolutely right that there is a heated conversation. And, you know, I'll give you the arguments and also a couple of examples, just, you know, to make it a bit more fun and, you know, interesting for your listeners. First of all, the supporters of Chinese FDI see it as an opportunity to increase, you know, the capital intensity of the African economy, given that FDI from the EU, UK, US has been lackluster over the past decade or so. Second, they see it as an opportunity to upgrade the technological frontier by getting connected to what has become one of the largest producers of patents in the world. And this, you know, there are two final points. One, that, you know, many African policymakers and entrepreneurs see Africa as China's China, as, you know, this big global manufacturer that in 10, 20 years under the auspices of the Chinese will become the global manufacturer. Mm-hmm. Finally, one point that policymakers really like of Chinese investors and politicians is that they are very pragmatic. To give you, and, you know, they have a to-do attitude that is appreciated. Just, you know, to give an example, Addis Ababa saw a light rail project. That's the first light rail transit in Eastern Africa, covering 17 kilometers. Mm-hmm. It was designed, financed, and operated by Chinese firms going from zero to operation in just 4 years. In that period, in Italy, we would probably not even go from one bureaucratic step to another bureaucratic step. So that's those that are in favor of Chinese FDI. The contrarians see it as a threat to lose political and economic sovereignty. You know, some like Sonau Baye on The Guardian explicitly mentioned the colonialist China. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, some others say, well, Chinese firms will bring Chinese workers, so they're not really going to create economic opportunities for Africans. Or, you know, that profits are going to be repatriated back to China so that Africa will miss really a development opportunity in there. And as you point out, this conversation is highly politicized in good and bad. I told you about Addis Ababa rail project. I'll tell you about Gikomba market in Nairobi. It's one of these big secondhand clothes markets that are very popular in West and East Africa.
Yeah.
And in 2019, a Kenyan newspaper noticed that there were a few shops managed by Chinese traders. And the discussion around this was so heated that within 3 days, the Kenyan Minister of the Interior announced that these Chinese nationals would be deported, despite having very unclear legal footing for such decision.
Now, you looked at the presence of Chinese FDI using a natural experiment, didn't you, in Ethiopia, which starts with a decline in some types of Chinese exports, which caused the FDI to flow to Ethiopia. What's causing this decline to start with?
The big problem of studying correlations between the arrival of Chinese FDI and local economic opportunity is that it's hard to gauge causality. It's hard to say, well, is it causing the economy to go badly or to go well? How do we think about that? And, you know, correlation is not causation. That's a mantra that we are all learning to master in economics and also outside. So we need to find events that create an increase in Chinese FDI that is not correlated with local economic conditions in Ethiopia.
I see,
right?
Yes.
So that's why we are, you know, we went there reading some kind of obscure tax codes to understand what happens. Let me keep it very simple here. If I am an entrepreneur in an OECD country, the UK or in Italy, for instance, whether I sell domestically or abroad, I pay the same value-added tax, the same VAT, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm indifferent between selling in Italy or in the UK. However, in China, it turns out that if I want to export, I pay an extra tax on my exports. And that comes out of some, you know, unique application of the value-added tax code. So what we do in this paper, first of all, we follow another wonderful paper by Gordon Herring, Mondion, and Ponce. They show that when these export taxes go up, for, you know, reasons related to Chinese decisions, you see that higher export taxes, well, lower exports, as, you know, we all would expect. What we do, however, is saying, okay, well, wait a second. Some of these Chinese entrepreneurs, because they don't want to pay higher taxes in China, they may relocate part of their production in Africa.
Yes.
And that's where we end up studying Ethiopia. And that's why what is interesting is that a decision from the Chinese government on the management of its own domestic economy turns out having effects that create this natural experiment in Ethiopia that we are studying indeed.
And where and what in Ethiopia gets more investment as a result?
Well, we observe that the arrival of this FDI follows a very strong sectoral component.
Hmm.
Just to give you a sense, Ethiopia has a very strong and diversified industrial base. And we see that Chinese FDI flows to certain districts, Ethiopian Weredas, that are highly specialized in specific sectors. Let me give you an example. Adama produces 25% of the country's paper, 17% of food, 11% of chemical. So what we observe that when Chinese FDI in paper arrives, it tends to go quite a lot to Adama, or food producers tend to go there and screw chemicals. While Mera, another district, produces more than a third of the country's ceramics. So these are the districts that see the arrival of FDI specialized in ceramics. In a sense, we go a little bit beyond just looking at districts, but we try to combine these two dimensions, the geographic dimension and the sectoral dimension, to understand where Chinese money is arriving.
And looking back at our conversation on the political impact of Chinese FDI, what immediate impact does this local China shock have on firms in Africa?
Well, overall, I would say that the impact is mixed. Firms that are competitors of this Chinese FDI, so suppose you are in the same district and in the same sector, and you see Chinese entrepreneurs arriving, well, you're not going to have a good time.
Mm.
In fact, you will experience a sizable decline in production, 20 to 30% employment, investment, use of raw materials and profit margin. So you're going to be, to some extent, kicked out of the market. However, there is not just gloom. In fact, if you are a firm that is connected, so if you are providing inputs to that sector in that district, or if you are a firm that uses the production of those Chinese companies as an input in your production, so you know you are upstream or downstream, as we say technically, then we observe very positive effects. You are expanding, probably because you will have a better product at a lower price, with a better technology, arguably. And then you are expanding production, absorbing more, expanding your employment, investing more, using more material, and selling more. In the end, if you are a firm that is neither a competitor nor connected, we don't really see that much is going on. And so you don't seem to be affected.
In the short run, which of these effects dominates?
That was why we started this project, right? We really wanted to understand in a completely prior-free manner. We know a lot of talk about Chinese FDI. What's the effect on economic activity at local level? To do so, we rely on a method that has become increasingly standard in economics to study economic activity, which is to use satellite lights. And so the satellite lights tend to be a very good predictor, particularly in low-income countries, of economic activity. So, you know, basically we can measure from the sky how the economy is developing at local level. And what do we see in the short run? That these positive and negative effects kind of cancel out. So we estimate, I would say, a precise zero in that respect.
Mm. And your data goes back some way now. So can you find a long-run impact on GDP?
We were like, fine, we see that there is some canceling out, but new technologies, new employees, new access to markets can change profoundly the way that modern economies work. And so we said, okay, let's think about the long run. And so we followed those districts after 3 years after the arrival of Chinese FDI, 6 years, 9 years, 12 years. And we were surprised to see that actually the local economy seems to take some time to benefit, 6 to 12 years, but it does. So we see a steady, progressive, and positive increase in local economic activity as time goes by. And we were actually comforted by the fact that another paper on India by Natalie Bo at UCLA and Adrian Matre at Princeton finds very similar effects looking at, you know, foreign capital liberalization in the subcontinent. So, you know, we seem to be adding to a literature that is finding some robust results on this positive effect of capital liberalization.
Which side of this development debate that we've been talking about is more likely, do you think, to be using your results to support their argument?
So as an economist, I need to be frank and say that, you know, we really started this project in an agnostic and prior-free manner. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, we were trying to be as rigorous in studying this topic as we could. And our research, indeed, can feed all narratives. So if you are a supporter of Chinese FDI in Africa, mm-hmm. you can say, well, the economy is growing, some firms are doing better, and that's wonderful. If you are a contrarian, well, you can say, you see, there are competitors are being smashed and kicked out of the market. So there is a bit of pick and choose for everyone. Now, to be a little bit more serious, we do believe that there are winners and losers from Chinese FDI, like any economic phenomenon. It is imperative to think how to secure that the gains from Chinese FDI are widely distributed. Ultimately, if you ask me, is Chinese FDI good or bad? I will answer your question like any economist often does, which it depends.
And as you say, structural transformation, I guess there will always be some winners and losers. Most important thing is to find out exactly who they are and what we can do about that. So thank you very much for your research.
Thank you very much, Tim.
You're listening to Transforming Growth. The paper we've been talking about is The Impact of Chinese FDI in Africa, Evidence from Ethiopia. And the authors are Ricardo Crescenzi and Nicola Limodio. So we have reached the end of our journey, and I'm joined by Doug and Joe again. Just to wrap up, Joe, one thing that strikes me is how much we just don't know yet. The things that we often assume are important and are important for policy, there's still a lot of gaps in our knowledge that we have to fill in there.
Exactly, Tim. I mean, I think that shows why a program like STEG is so important, because there's so much, especially with lower income countries, that we don't know in terms of policy, in terms of the underlying economics that's going on. And questions arise. So as a continued program, it's important as well.
And Doug, there's going to be some people who've been listening to this and thinking, I want to be one of the people that does the research to fill in those blanks. If they want to get in touch with STEG, is that the right thing to do, I guess? And how should they do it?
We are absolutely interested in expanding the research community of people working on these questions. So we welcome inquiries from researchers around the world and at all stages of career. We're particularly interested in encouraging doctoral students and early career researchers to get involved in STEG. They can reach us through the STEG website, or they can email Joe or me, and we really welcome inquiries. There will be opportunities to receive research funding through the STEG program. We expect, if all goes well, to issue some calls for proposals for research sometime in the second quarter of 2021. We're waiting to hear about budgets and about how much funding we'll have, but we will be putting out some information about calls for proposals, and we would encourage people to get involved.
Well, it sounds like a great opportunity, and thank you for all the work that you're doing on STEG. Thank you very much for sticking with me over the last few episodes and helping me find out more about structural transformation. Joe and Doug, I hope I'll be speaking to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks so much for your interest, Tim. It's been a real pleasure.
And thanks to all of you for listening to Transforming Growth. You won't want to miss any of our episodes. Subscribe to make sure you hear the whole series. If this is your first episode, you've got a lot more to listen to. And you can find out more about STEG, as Doug says, by visiting steg.ceper.org.